Welcome to another episode of The Breakdown. With the rise of the internet, one of the things that we've seen unfold over the last couple of decades, really, has been the fact that we've seen all kinds of new and unexpected forms of media pop up. Now, there's definitely been a dark side to all of this, and we've seen this during the COVID pandemic, where there's been a lot of misinformation and disinformation and harmful information out there. But we're starting to see the rise of maybe something new, which is really interesting, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Our guest on the show today is doing something at 12 that many people don't do at all, really, or until they're a little bit later on in life. And I am so excited and grateful that Mr. Wyatt Sharp of The Wyatt Sharp Show has joined us today. Wyatt, thank you so much for making a little bit of time for us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem, man. So you're in Ontario.
Yes.
Okay. So I have to give a little bit of context for anybody who doesn't know who you are yet, which in the sandbox that we play in here is probably not going to be very many people because a lot of people have heard of you. But for anybody who isn't familiar, Wyatt started a show about a year ago called The Wyatt Sharp Show. And he has been not only conducting interviews, but attending press conferences and asking questions of some very, very high profile, high powered people. And he really sort of popped onto the AB Poly, AB Ledge, Alberta politics legislature scene in the last couple of weeks when he not only interviewed the Premier of Alberta, but he also has started appearing at press conferences. And I'll say from my end, we were live tweeting a particularly catastrophic press conference that Minister LaGrange put on. And all of a sudden, during the questions, we heard this younger sounding voice come on and ask an incredibly coherent question. And why it's been the subject of some discussion as to the nature of journalism, which is a probably conversation that we really need to have. So why, before we get started, how did you get started?
Well, it would depend on like what aspect. Just taking an interest in it probably started, like it started way before I actually started, you know, creating media that, you know, had politicians and had journalists a part of it. So I mean, it probably started in around 2020. So basically 2 years ago now. So it definitely doesn't feel like it's been that long. I kind of, you know, you'll just be kind of one day I'll just be sitting there getting ready for an interview or something, and I'll just kind of reflect back on the fact that it's been almost 2 years. I started I started doing all of it when I I would say just turned 11, maybe just as my like last month as a 10-year-old. So yeah, I kind of just started just like researching about it, and I'd get like I downloaded a couple news apps on my phone, so I would maybe get like a news article notification, and then I kind of started just taking more of an interest in it. So then I emailed some of like my local MPs and local representatives and just introduced myself, kind of told them who I was. And then one of them went as far as to emailing our local newspaper company outlet, which is basically, I'm from a very small town. So if you're from my town, we have basically, aside from mine, if you would count mine, but I don't necessarily consider mine a local journalism outlet, but we have one journalism outlet in my small town called the Orno Weekly Times. So when I messaged my MP, he then forwarded that email to them. And then I've been writing weekly articles in like a column for that newspaper since about June of 2020. And then I started my show at the beginning of 2021. And actually just just yesterday was my 1 year starting since I started my show. So I didn't actually realize that until I just looked down at the little date on the screen. But yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit more about what made you, I mean, I can understand to some degree why someone your age would be interested in the journalism media side of things, especially with the last couple of years that we've had, where media and online media has played such a big role in so many people's lives. So I want to sort of, what made you interested in that part? And then we're going to talk about the politics side, because that's a whole different beast.
Well, I would say, are you talking about like the online media part as opposed to, What I would say, like the ease of starting a platform through online media. Obviously, it's a lot easier to start your own kind of online media outlet than it would be to, let's say, have a channel on TV. And when you were, if you compare the two, I mean, I watch, you know, Power and Politics, I watch Power Play, I watch both of those shows every night. But I also watch like a fair bit of like online media, online shows, and online like media presentation. So I kind of just like when looking at the two of them, there's, you know, pros and cons to them. I think each one of them, you know, I would say that there's definitely an unprecedented number of like younger people who are specifically on online media. So I mean, that's one thing I would say is it's definitely easier to reach the younger demographics through online media than it would be just through, you know, any regular type of media. But yeah, I would say there's pros and cons, but one of them would be the ease of, you know, just starting it on like an online platform and how easy it is. And then the second, as I mentioned, would just be the ability to reach different age demographics, specifically the younger ones.
What sparked your interest in politics? Because I got to say, I'm old is what I am. I'm very, very old. And the people that I tend to work with or hang out with, if I was to say, hey, are you going to watch Power and Politics tonight? They would go, what's that? And so here I am having a conversation with you and you watch it every night. So what has driven that interest in the political realm for you?
Well, that's an interesting point too. I have basically, aside from, you know, talking to journalists, talking to, you know, politicians and stuff for my show, there's practically nobody that I can have, you know, an actual political conversation with because, you know, practically no one likes it, or not necessarily that, but no one is interested in it. And to be honest, that kind of can lead into why I took an interest into it. I would never necessarily, like, if you were to ask me prior to me being involved in politics, like, oh, would you ever consider being involved in politics? Have you, have you read anything about it? I would give the same sort of answer that a lot of my peers and a lot of my friends would give if I were to ask them that question, like, no, what's politics? Like, but so I would say it was honestly kind of just like, just realizing that it impacts, you know, the things around me. One thing I would say is we were actually in Florida. I don't necessarily know if this is what's caused it, because I always say I don't really know what caused it. I kind of just, but one thing that, like, the first kind of reason why I took an interest in it and the first kind of news story is when we were actually in Florida, me and my mom and some of my cousins were in Florida the week before COVID began, and our time that we were arriving back in Toronto from Florida was March the 13th, which was the exact day that Dr. Tam advised against non-essential travel outside of Canada. So it was kind of, you know, we were in Florida these last couple of days and we were getting these notifications that school was canceled, getting notifications that, you know, on March 11th was when they declared it a pandemic, and that's when we were still there. So it was kind of just the uncertainty of being there that I started reading about it when we were there, and then started taking an interest too in the, you know, people who are making the decisions, realizing that, you know, the people who are making these decisions about, you know, travel advisories and such are people that make decisions about lots of different things. So I would say it's really just, you know, having, again, I don't fully know, because there's multiple components to, I think, why I got involved, but the biggest one would just be it having an impact on, you know, things that are just around people in their daily life.
Okay. Now I want to talk to you a bit about your process, because one of the conversations that went on this week in a lot of the political circles was a compare and contrast between I'm going to use the word quality of questions that you have asked in a couple of press conferences versus the quality of questions that some of the other, and I'm not even going to call them journalists, I think you deserve the title a little bit more, pundits, I'll say, who have also showed up at those press conferences. What makes you decide how you're going to construct a question? How much, I mean, you clearly do a lot of research before you show up. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, and I mean, like, just before that, to your previous point, that's another interesting thing that I've kind of got to learn, especially during the most recent federal election, of, you know, how different journalists asks different, you know, questions. And obviously, one thing that you're kind of seeing now as well is, you know, different media outlets kind of, not necessarily so much in Canada, you know, we have, you know, CBC, CTV, Global News, all of those things, you know, my show, I try to like all of those, you know, things try to, you know, generally for the most part, they're in the middle and they bring on guests from different sides of the aisle. But specifically, if you look down to the United States, you know, there's Fox News, it's on the right, there's CNN, which, you know, it is fairly, I mean, you know, they might be a little bit on the left, but for the most part, they are still generally in the middle, NBC. But like in the United States, their media kind of landscape is much different than in Canada, with, you know, some media outlets seeming to lean one way or the other, which is sort of, to a certain extent, there's some media outlets like that evolving in Canada, especially during the election. Some of them were most prominent, like we saw some of them who, you know, would post about stuff about different questions that journalists were asking and criticizing them. So the way that different journalists construct a question is, honestly, it's obviously just about what we think people want to know. But also, when I'm putting my question together, I'm thinking kind of, okay, I want to have a mixture of both, you know, what do people want to know, but also a question that isn't going to seem like I'm trying to lean one way or the other. And sometimes you can try so hard, but it still doesn't even matter, because as soon as the press conference ends, or as soon as I post an interview or something, you'll get an email or you'll get a tweet at you or something saying that you are leaning too far in one direction. But thankfully, that hasn't happened a lot yet. But I also accept a lot that that is largely probably because I'm 12 and, you know, some people might not want to criticize me as much. But yeah, so I would say that constructing a question would just go, you know, between making sure it doesn't lean too far one way or the other, and then obviously just making sure it's a question that, you know, is relevant to the topic and that people want to know.
Okay. I'm curious, one of the other things that I'm wondering about is, how do you balance, or does it even enter your concern? There is a perception that has been bandied around that people are entertaining Wyatt and the Wyatt Sharp show because it's cute because he's 12. I would happily argue, no, I think that that's happening because he's asking some really smart questions in really smart ways. But I mean, there's, taking a look at the caliber of guests that you've had on your show, you've had Jason Kenney, who rarely does in-person interviews. You've had Doug Ford, you've had, correct me if I'm wrong, all of the leaders of all of the federal political parties. You've had other journalists who have come on. Your most recent episode was a global journalist, I believe. And the chief of, or the president of the Canadian Medical Association. So do you worry at all whether or not people are saying, yeah, I'll do an interview with Wyatt Sharp because, oh, he's 12, it's cute? Or do you think that I would argue your body of work speaks for you, but does that enter into your concern at all, or?
I definitely, you know, there's people who are, you know, definitely do, you know, say, oh, you're 12, or, oh, you know, you're doing so much and it's so good. And then it's always followed by, you know, for your age. But some of that, I think, is kind of just, you know, just like kind of by default. And I mean, just they don't expect someone my age to be doing that. But at the same time, I would say, you know, for the most part, my questions don't really vary that much from, you know, a regular journalist who would ask questions. And some people might say that that's not true. But, you know, like the questions I ask, I just generally think of them as questions that people want to hear the answers to. And, you know, in regards to whether or not it affects who I get on my show, I mean, I don't think so. Like the only point in the email even that like I'll send to people that, you know, I want to come on my show is just at the very beginning, I'll say I'm 12 and then that's it. I kind of just explain a little bit more about my show and then tell them some of the other people I've interviewed. And so I don't necessarily make it like it's not really, obviously, you know, I'm 12, people want to, you know, people think it's cool that I'm 12 and that I'm doing this. But at the end of the day, I still just want to, you know, ask questions based on things that people want to know the answers to. And like, it's good and it's also bad. You know, being 12 sort of, you know, is an advantage, but also a disadvantage, because people, like, if I send an email to someone and, you know, they know who I am and they've saw all my different interviews before and they think like, okay, yeah, maybe he can actually ask some good questions, then they'll come on. But other times they might get the email and think, oh, he's 12. He might not know what he's going to talk about. So I don't really want to waste my time. I mean, I don't think there's been very many people that have thought that, but definitely I think it can be both an advantage and a disadvantage.
That's a very, very objective answer. I'm wondering, who are you, your sort of role models? Because you, again, I go back to the fact that I have yet to see an interview. And like I said, I spent a good chunk of my afternoon watching your episodes. I have yet to see any of those where I thought to myself, ah, he's phoning it in. He doesn't know what he's talking about here. Overwhelmingly, you come very well prepared and you come very well with facts. So I'm curious, who are you role modeling off of?
So, I would say, you know, it's, a combination of journalists, politicians, but, there's definitely journalists who, you know, I'll hear ask questions. Abigail Beeman from Global News has been, I went to Ottawa and told her I was going to be in Ottawa. And then she offered to take me on a tour of the Global News newsroom and show me around. So she's been a big one. David Akin, also from Global News. David Cochran. Honestly, there's like during the election, when I went to various campaign events, the experience that you get from going to a campaign event as a media member is great, because you get to meet the campaign staff, but you also get to meet, you know, fellow journalists, and you get to kind of just, you know, introduce yourselves to them. But also, like, I first met Abigail Beeman during the election, and then we emailed back and forth with each other. And then we went to, when I was in Ottawa, she gave me a tour of the newsroom. So it's kind of like, you know, it kind of just started. I just kind of started talking to different journalists, primarily during the election, if I was at a campaign event, and would just say hello to them. And then yeah, they've been super great to give me other experiences. And like I mentioned, one of them is giving me a tour of the newsroom at Global News.
Okay.
One of the things that struck me as I've been watching the conversation that's sort of been swirling around you is it seems like journalists are very supportive of what you're doing. And I think, again, that's because of the quality of the work you're doing. One of the comments that we made earlier in the week was, if he was asking what Adriana LaGrange's favorite color was, okay, well, maybe there would be cause for concern. But the kid showed up with some data and synthesized that into a pretty impressive question. So everybody calm down. It seems like a lot of the people who are asking questions are people who are not media or not journalists. What would you say, if you would say anything, and I mean, you don't have to, but what would you say to the people who are saying, I'm not sure if Wyatt should be calling into the press conferences?
Yeah, I mean, all journalists, regardless of, some journalists take opinions on different things. I mean, like, some part of the role of a journalist, obviously you present the facts, but sometimes, you know, a journalist from a media outlet might be asked to, you know, be a pundit or something. And being a pundit, you have to give your, you know, your opinion on various things. So look, journalists have their opinion too. And sometimes I think if you were just kind of sitting there, you know, just presenting the facts in, you know, a non-biased way, just talking to yourself, anchoring the news all the time, it might get a little bit boring. So, I mean, I don't necessarily, like, if there's some journalists who are, you know, presenting very controversial opinions, then obviously, yeah, they shouldn't be, you know, there's could be questions around whether or not they should be allowed to do things like ask questions. But like you mentioned, I tried to ask, you know, fairly good questions. And then there was, you know, some people who disagreed with the fact that it was a good question, or even some people you know, said that, you know, the quality of a question is irrelevant, which I questioned a little bit. But yeah, so I mean, I won't say too much about that, but just the fact that, you know, quality journalism does matter. And, you know, the type of question that you're asking is going to, because for people who are just watching at home and people who are just, you know, watching the press conference because they want to, you know, they have questions, they have concerns. The conference, I asked questions at actually both of them. I've called into other ones. I've only called into about four, but the ones that I have gotten through to were the education ministers. And, you know, there's people watching at home who just have, you know, concerns specifically for the education press conference about, you know, education concerns and about, you know, their kids going back to school and such. And so people sitting at home watching the press conference don't care who the reporter is. They just want to, you know, have a question that can hopefully get them answers. And so, I mean, that's what I try to do when I ask a question. And, you know, some people who looked more at the politics end of it as opposed to the actual question end of it weren't super happy with the fact that I got to ask a question. But, you know, that's the same with any journalist. If they ask a question at any press conference, there's going to be people who don't necessarily like it, which, again, is just all part of it.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, man, because to me, what I look for in, when I'm trying to decide what journalists I should be listening to, I don't look at what kind of shoes do they wear or what's their favorite flavor of ice cream or any other demographic information. That's irrelevant to me. What I'm interested in is, how are you asking your questions? What are you asking your questions about? And are you trying to lead the conversation? Because those things, I think you saw, you covered very well, that wanders into the range of punditry and editorializing. And there's a market for that, I'd like to think. But true journalism shouldn't be about any of those things. And I think you're doing a remarkable job of separating yourself from the questions that you're asking.
Well, I would say too, like there was one person who, when I asked a question, didn't like the fact that I was from Ontario, and well, there was multiple people who didn't like the fact that I was from Ontario, but it's
Alberta.
But I was, you know, from Ontario, and I called in and asked a question, and some people, you know, didn't necessarily like that, but, you know, it doesn't, like you said, and like I said prior to you, it's just, people just want to have answers on certain topics, and it's no different than, you know, if a reporter was from Toronto, or if a reporter was from Manitoba and called in and asked a question at a federal press conference. I mean, in my opinion, as long as the person is informed on the topic that they're asking about, and they're going to ask a question that doesn't express, you know, big bias towards one way or the other, then, you know, the question that they're asking is most important, not necessarily where they're from, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I would be inclined to agree with you. I would also be happy to argue, given the veracity with which this government has cited Ontario as an example that they're trying to follow, there is definitely an argument to be made that, I mean, A, media is in many ways certainly ignorant of provincial borders. But if we're going to be talking about Ontario stuffs, having somebody from Ontario asking questions doesn't seem like too big of a reach to me.
Yeah. No, I would agree.
So I'm curious, what are your plans? What do you got next?
Well, to be honest.
Well, actually, let me ask you a question before I get to that question. So, are you what is Ontario doing for schooling these days? Are you going back to classes right away, or what's the deal there?
So Ontario delayed it until January the 17th, at least January the 17th. So, I actually wrote an opinion article for the Toronto Star the other day about you know, the return to. To the return to school not being until January 17th, and kind of just, you know, looked at the advice from various public health experts and kind of put it all together. So and in that article, I just talked about it. But yeah, so not going back until January the 17th. And so at least January the 17th.
Okay. And are you going to be doing in class or online, or what are they?
Well, sorry. So we're doing online right now. We went back on the 5th. And so from the 5th to at least the 17th, we're doing online. And then on January the 17th, as of right now, I believe you'll have the choice to do between in-person and online.
What are you going to do?
I do in-person only because it's not, you know, just like socializing with your peers, with your educators just can't happen at home. And it's just, you know, for, and I think the majority of people would definitely agree with that. I think it's just, you know, wanting to be back in, you know, the classroom, and different people have different opinions on whether or not classrooms are safe right now. I mean, here in Ontario, the majority of school boards, for a story I did, I reached out to different school boards here in Ontario and asked them, you know, if the claims that the governments are making that, you know, each classroom has a HEPA filtration unit is true. And so I reached out to, you know, numerous school boards, and the majority of them did say that the claims that the government is making is true, that most classrooms who have either a HEPA unit or another type of filter to kind of do air filtration to make sure that the air is clean and is free of COVID. So, you know, in terms of that, I mean, I feel safe going back to school and hope that, you know, they return back on the 17th. But at the same time, there's obviously measures that might need to be taken if, you know, cases continue to surge like they are.
Well, you're lucky that you, I got to say, it is a source of no shortage of consternation for me that the number of times I have to say, gosh, I wish we were doing things like Ontario, because we're getting messages from teachers here who are literally being told to just crack a window, it'll be fine.
That's not like when you look at Ontario and Alberta from an Ontario perspective. To be completely honest, Ontario and Alberta, their COVID situations do look vastly the same. I mean, there's obviously some differences. I mean, I'm not sure in Alberta how things like N95 masks are working. Here in Ontario, they've been supplied to teachers, educators, and staff. But I don't know if that's no. So that I pointed that out because I'm not sure if that's happened in Alberta. But like for the majority of things, you know, they're based on just looking at it, it seems like both Ontario and Alberta are taking things from sort of a leadership perspective and government perspective. The same way, you know, if cases start to surge a lot, they, you know, I believe during Christmas time, a couple of days before Christmas, they said to maybe reduce their gathering sizes. Is that true?
Yeah, they did. They did say it would be a good idea to reduce your gathering sizes, but I don't know how many people did.
So things like that are largely similar in Ontario and Alberta. When cases start to surge, they take a step back generally and start to look at ways that they can fix that. So I would say the situation in both of the two provinces is largely the same, with at the same time understanding that two different governments, that there's two different governments and no two governments make the exact same decisions.
Well, I know there's probably a whole lot of teachers who are listening to this who are jealous of the fact that they're getting, Ontario teachers are getting N95s, because Alberta teachers certainly are not. What's next for you? Are you going to keep going with the Wyatt Sharp Show ad infinitum, or what's, I mean, you have, and this is why I say, I would happily challenge anyone who says a 12-year-old kid can't be a journalist, because you just told me that you wrote an opinion piece for the Toronto Star, you have your own weekly column, and you produce your own show. So anybody who's talking like that, I think, needs to talk less. But what are you going to do next?
Well, I mean, I think it'll depend on, for as long as the media landscape stays the same as, you know, it is right now, I would say just continuing with my show. But you know, even if you look at 5 years ago, the presence of, you know, online media is nowhere near the same as it is right now. So, I mean, when it comes time for me to actually get a job, or actually considering, you know, getting like a job in journalism, it'll really just depend on the media landscape of how it is. But for as long as I can, you know, picture right now, I think I'll just continue with my show and try to get more interesting people. Right now, I'm trying to set out a goal to interview all of the provincial premiers, since, you know, I've interviewed all the party leaders federally. And so, yeah, I'm going to set out now to try and interview all of the provincial premier, so I have two down and still have 11 to go.
Well, and I saw that you're headhunting Dr. Jill Biden there as well, so I like your ambition.
Well, the American media landscape seems to be a lot, or the potential audience reach seems to be a lot larger in the United States than it does in Canada. So by interviewing U.S. politicians, hopefully I can expand my kind of audience.
Awesome. I only have two questions left for you, sir, and then I'll let you get back to your evening. The first one is, I'm curious, as I said earlier, I got two kids of my own, and I'm curious how your parents react to all of this, because if my 11-year-old said, "Hey dad, there's this guy who hosts this show in Alberta who uses puppets and makes a lot of jokes who wants to interview me," that's cool, right? I would have a lot of questions. So I'm curious, like how are your parents navigating all of this stuff for you?
Honestly, obviously my parents are super supportive, but for the most part, it's just, they just kind of, I guess you could say, trust me. I mean, I've done like interviews in terms of, you know, kind of having the, you know, tables flipped around, because for the most part, I interview people, but when people interview me, like I've been on Global's morning show before and I've been on breakfast television, so they kind of just, I guess, understand the different ends of kind of the media landscape. And it's not too often that I kind of have the, you know, tables flipped around and other people interview me, but when that does happen, then obviously it's cool, and I get to, you know, I get to do a lot more talking than I do in my interviews when I interview people.
Cool. Last question I have for you, and then I'm going to get you to plug your stuffs. Where'd you get the cool sign?
The one right there.
You got a dope on air sign. Where'd you get that from?
Well, I got that for Christmas, so I couldn't tell you. I'm sure if I go and ask my grandma, she'd be happy to tell me where she got it from. But I don't know off the top of my head.
That's fantastic. If people want to follow you on social media, your YouTube channel, all of that kind of stuff, where, and to be clear, I have immersed myself in the Wyatt Sharp show, not only today, but for the last couple of days. It is not fluff. It is not just a kid being cute or whatever. It is more substantive than what we do here. That's for damn sure. Where do people find you?
Well, my actual show is just on YouTube, The Wyatt Sharp Show. And then, as you mentioned, I'm on Twitter, and I have Instagram, but I don't really use it. Primarily Twitter and YouTube.
Okay. What's your Twitter handle if people want to keep up with what you're doing?
Wyatt Sharp 8.
Why 8?
Because that's what Twitter came up with after I typed in Wyatt Sharp 15 as my hockey and baseball number, and Wyatt Sharp 15 was taken, so 8 was the next best number.
There you go. Well, Wyatt, for what it's worth, I mean, we had this conversation when we did the Twitter live spaces last weekend, but I want to reiterate it again. I think that you are doing real journalism. I think you're doing a great job at doing real journalism. I think you're doing a better job at doing real journalism than a lot of people who claim that title, who probably shouldn't have it. And as I said to you in the live spaces, if they're throwing rocks at you, you're doing something right. And so just ignore the terrible people who are being terrible people, because you are already light years ahead of so many people with what you're doing, and I am just super, super impressed and feel like a hack. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much for having me.
As always, if you appreciate the kind of content that we're trying to produce here at The Breakdown, we would love it if you swung by our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab and signed up for a small monthly sponsorship of the work that we're trying to do here. It is because of the support that we receive from our Patreon sponsors that we're able to continually up our game, and it is tremendously appreciated. So I want to throw a big thank you out to them, and you can go ahead and visit that website and join and support us as well, because we need all the help we can get. Thank you so much for your attention. Thank you so much for listening and being a part of these important conversations. And we will see you next time on The Breakdown.